that.
I think I forgot to turn it on.
Yes.
Oh. Okay.
Let me just say that this is our class on Thursday morning on January 26th in Jewish Thought. If you forgot to turn on 5 minutes ago, you missed the best part, recorder.
You missed the best part.
Okay.
I still say, as an example of this, you know, you look upon the Nobel Prize winners of this year, of which there were 7 Nobel Prize winners in science throughout the world, and 5 of them are Jewish.
That's unbelievable.
Which is unbelievable. When
it
you
is
have 7
believable.
Billion people in the world, you have 11 million Jews, and they have.
Okay, so we're going to read one more line from last week's material, again, a line that we didn't get to. And then we'll go on to the material I gave out today. So we're turning the page on last week's handout, and we're going to look at the bottom of page 447. Just a little tidbit of my Maimonidean wisdom.
We don't have 447.
Okay. On the back of 446.
Oh.
I always say that figuring out the photostats is the hardest part of our class.
Yes.
The bottom of 447, we're looking at about the last 7 or 8 lines, beginning from the middle of a line that says, as for the fact.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? As for the fact.
Oh, yeah.
As for the fact that one individual possesses many sachets and clothes adorned with gold, whereas another lacks these superfluities of life, there is no injustice and no inequity in this.
Sounds
he was like obtained.
George Romney.
Say it again?
Sounds like George Romney. You don't know who George Romney is?
No.
He's a Republican candidate for president.
He's the Mormon.
Not George.
Oh,
Mitt
Romney.
Yeah, Mitt.
Oh,
George was his father.
Take it back. Take it back.
I thought you were quoting his son or something.
George
was his
father.
Okay.
What age we were.
He who has obtained these luxuries has not gained thereby an increment in his substance. He has only obtained a false imagining or a plaything. And he who lacks the superfluidities of life is not necessarily deficient. That's another, of course, effort to justify God. Because most of the things we complain about, putting upon aside disease and infirmity and death, most of the things we complain about, says the Rambam, they're nothing to complain about.
Yeah.
And if I complain that I only have $100,000 and not $5 million, well, that has nothing to do with justice and injustice. Even if I'm the most righteous person in the world, I should not expect to get rich for it, because richness is not a reward.
But
it might even be a punishment, but it's certainly not a reward.
One thing he forgot to add, though, was to the statement that he who has gathered all these material goods, as long as he acquired them honestly.
Right.
That's the point. I mean, you know, you take a person that acquired all these material things dishonestly, is one thing. But you take another person that acquired them through hard work and honestly, that's another thing.
Of course you're right. But in both cases, the person gained nothing, in a real sense.
Yeah.
On the other hand, he
gained
something.
Of course he gained something. He gains a better way of life.
No,
what do you mean,
nothing
no?
better about it. Says the Rambam. I'm not telling you my opinion.
The Rambam didn't consider that by having these extras, he is supporting other workers.
The car I drive today is 20 times better than the car I drove 30 years ago.
So what?
30 years ago.
So what?
So what? It gives me a better way of life.
Okay. So
what's wrong?
Okay.
What's wrong with that?
Wait, let me just say something, and then Mo.
To have something corporeal.
So what's wrong
right.
with that?
Oh, Bruce is good here. Okay.
So what's wrong with that?
And it didn't say wrong with it. We just said nothing good in it.
Nothing
Let me explain. The Rambam goes on to say in other places,
really
not here.
The wrong, isn't it?
Wait a second. The Rambam says in a number of places that, of course, the end goal and the purpose of life is knowledge. It's not in the physical sphere.
Knowledge of God.
It's in the sphere of the intangible, the spiritual. That's clear. Secondly, the Rambam says that you cannot gain knowledge when you're hungry or thirsty or cold.
There's no, where there's no bread, there's no Torah.
Which means the Rambam admits and he knows that you need to have a certain minimum of material goods in order to move towards the purpose of life.
Right.
That's true. However, says the Rambam in many places, that what most of us consider the minimum is far beyond the minimum. And furthermore, most of us are not willing to subsist with even what we consider the minimum. We want more than that. Mm-hmm. And all of those additional those additions of physical objects, they are not good in any sense, and they might even be actually detrimental. Mm-hmm. They're not good in any sense beyond the minimum, and therefore those of us who are lacking those extras beyond the minimum and complain about it, it's not just I'm a good person, why don't I get what I want? That it has nothing to do with injustice. It's just a matter of your own stupidity, not knowing what is good and what is not good, says the Rambam. To me, it makes a lot of sense.
Makes some sense.
Okay, if Harry agrees with you, it makes some sense, I'll accept that. Today's new material.
I mean, I have to look at my own life. To look at my life as a boy, look at my life today. It's like day and night.
Mm-hmm. Right? There is some minimum of external material goods that help.
I think it's beyond some minimum. Material goods.
Well, the whole thing is moderation.
Okay.
Is that what he believes in moderation? Rambam believes in moderation.
Absolutely. So now we're going into new sheets I gave out.
Right.
Can we go on?
Chapter 16?
Chapter 16, it says. Okay. The topic says Providence and Theodicy in Medieval Jewish Thought, Milton at JCC, January 26th and February 2nd, 2012. We're beginning chapter 16. An aberrant opinion is professed by the philosophers concerning God, may he be exalted, with respect to his knowledge of what is other than he. And there's a very great aberration. In other words, the question is, what does God know beyond God? What does he know about things outside of himself? How much does he know? And they have stumbled in such a way that neither they nor those who follow them with regard to this opinion can find absolution. I shall let you hear the difficulties through which they were plunged into aberrant opinion. I shall also let you hear the opinion of our law, Torah, about this. This means God's knowledge. And our opposition to them, to their philosophies, in regard to their evil and incongruous opinions concerning God's knowledge. And you see here, the Rambam will be quoting from non-Jewish philosophers. It's just another example that to find truth, we look not only in what we call Torah, we look in philosophy, and not just Jewish philosophy. That which in the first place was mainly responsible for plunging them into and impelling them towards this opinion, this bad opinion they had, is what appears at first sight to be a lack of order in the circumstances of the human individuals and the fact that among the Adamites, that's us guys, some excellent individuals are in a sorry and grievous plight, whereas some wicked individuals are in good and pleasurable circumstances. That's another way of saying what we've been talking about for 2 years. Why do bad things happen to good people, and why do good things happen to bad people? Or in Hebrew, tzaddik v'ralo rasha v'tovlo. The Rambam is now coming directly head-on with our subject, although until now he's also talked about it, as we've seen. So the fact that good things do happen to bad people and bad things to good people, yeah, that's what we're dealing with. That's true, that happens. How are we going to understand it? This impelled them, this reality, impelled them to formulate the division that you will now hear. They said, one of two things must be true. God either knows nothing about these individual circumstances and does not comprehend them, or he knows and apprehends them. One or the other. God knows or doesn't know. Right? When I get a cold, or God forbid, when someone gets sick or dies, does God know about it or doesn't know about it? That's the question on the table. This is a necessary division. Either he knows or he doesn't know. Thereupon they say, these philosophers say, if he apprehends and knows them, knows the things that happen, one of three things must be true. Either he orders them, setting them according to the best, the most perfect, most accomplished order. If God knows that things happen on this earth, either he's the one that makes them happen, that's possibly number one, or he is incapable of establishing order in them and has no power over them, right? That's the second possibility. Either God is in charge, or he's unable to be in charge. Or again, he knows and is able to establish excellent order and governance, but neglects to do it. Mm-hmm. In consequence of his disdain and contempt, or in consequence of his jealousy. Just as we find among human beings, a man who was able to procure a benefit for another individual and was aware of the latter's need to obtain this benefit from, but out of his ill nature, his wickedness, and his jealousy, begrudges him this benefit and hence does not procure it. So it's very easy. There's three possibilities. I'll put them on the board. Hey, first, we say that either God knows or doesn't know.
Yes.
Right? Knows or doesn't know. And if God knows, then he has power to order things and does so. And the third possibility is he has power to order but doesn't do so. But does not do so. And the second possibility is has no power. He knows what's happening, but he has no power.
There's got to be a third, another possibility that he put us here and he left us to our own free will.
Okay, right? That he has the power, mm-hmm. but doesn't do so, or perhaps he has no power.
No, it's an entirely different thing. If he has put us here and gives us free will, then he's decided that he either has no power or he has power. It's a...
Right. Okay, you're right. I've thought about it also. You're right. But let's go with what the Rambam... The Rambam is not saying what he believes. He's saying, he's given the logical process that some earlier philosophers went through. And Jim is right that there is really this fourth possibility, that he has the power to do so, but does not do so, not because of jealousy or disdain, but because it's for the good that he doesn't do so.
Mm-hmm. He left up to individuals to do so.
Yeah. Let's put the Rambam has power to do, to order, but does not do so because of jealousy, etc.
Who's jealousy?
God's jealousy.
What do you mean God's jealousy? God's jealousy of us?
He doesn't want human beings to be richer than us. But this is not the Rambam speaking. The Rambam is simply giving over the thought processes of some very, very important earlier philosophers. And as we turn the page to page 462, you can see in the footnotes, the footnote one, that the Rambam here is bringing from a treatise from Alexandra of Aphrodisias. Reading on, the top of page 462 is about the seventh line. This division is likewise necessary and correct. He seems to be agreeing that these are the three possibilities. I mean to say, says the Rambam, that everyone who knows a certain matter must necessarily either exercise care in the governance of what he knows.
Wait, what page are you on?
462. Or neglect it.
Right,
that's either possibilities one or three.
Mm-hmm. Okay, just division.
As a man, for instance, neglects the governance of the cats in his house, or of even more contemptible things. Again, sometimes he who exercises care with regard to some matter may be incapable of governing, though willing to do so. After they had established this division, they decided categorically that two of the three cases, one of which must necessarily be valid with regard to everything that knows, are impossible with regard to God, may he be exalted. I'll stop there. In other words, the philosopher said that if God knows, then one of these three things is true. And if you think about the three, two are necessarily false. So it must be the third. Right? So if you're one of the philosophers, what do you think? You look at these three possibilities, two of them are certainly false. And the other one is true. So which do the philosophers say is certainly false? If you're thinking about it?
Has no power.
Has no power. Okay? Certainly false. And Schiff is right. That's what the Rambam's about to say. That the Rambam says, that the philosopher said, that it can't be that it has no power. And like Harry said, the Rambam's going to say that the philosophers say, it can't be that he has power, but he doesn't do so out of jealousy or other evil motivations. So it must be that he has power to order things and does so. But if we look at reality, it doesn't seem to be well ordered because bad things happen to good people. Therefore, this one must be wrong also.
They're all wrong.
So what's left? Look on the board, what's left?
He doesn't know.
Right? And the Rambam says that the ancient philosophers concluded that God must not know what's happening on earth. Because if he did know, then we have no recourse. If he did know, one can't be true, two can't be true, and three can't be true. Let's read it in the Rambam's own words.
Well, is it that God doesn't know, or that if God doesn't care to be involved?
No, doesn't know. K-N-O-W. That's what the Rambam says that many of the ancient philosophers concluded. Let's read on. We were in a line that begins with the word impossible. And we're reading the last four words of that line. Namely, the case which he would have no power, that can't be true, has no power, or the case in which he would have power, but not care for the things he knew. Right? He would just have power, but not want to get involved because he has better things to do, he doesn't care, he's jealous, whatever. For this would create in him evil, or incapacity. Right? If it is number two, it's incapacity. If it's number three, he's acting evilly. Neither of them is a possible, and he is exalted above these two things. Thus, in the whole division, only the following cases remain. Either he knows nothing at all of these circumstances, right? That's the top right-hand side. Either he knows nothing at all of these circumstances, or he knows them and establishes them the most excellent order. But we, at any rate, find that they are without order. Do not observe analogies and have no continuity since they ought to have, because bad things happen to good people. Consequently, this is a proof that he does not know these circumstances in any way or through any cause whatever. That's what the ancient philosophers said, as the Rambam quotes them.
This is mainly Aristotle.
He's quoting from the treatise of Alexander, who summarized a number, apparently, of ancient philosophers from his time in before that.
How come all during the Torah, the five books of Moses, God knew exactly what was...
We're not talking about Torah. We're talking about the ancient philosopher Alexander.
No, but I mean, but he's saying that God doesn't know what's going on with the...
But Alexander wasn't Jewish.
Huh?
Alexander wasn't Jewish.
What did Alexander commit in this? I don't see his name on here.
Yes, you do.
Yes, you do.
Where is...
Look at the bottom page. He's quoting him. He's quoting
him.
The Rambam's quoting Alexander, and you're about to see that the Rambam mentions Alexander by name in another few lines. So I'll read it again. Consequently, it's the first word of a line. This is a proof that he does not know these circumstances in any way or through any cause whatsoever. That's what the philosopher said. And the Rambam says, this is what has plunged them at first into this very aberrant opinion. In other words, they reached the conclusion that God doesn't know anything. And the Rambam says, that is a very aberrant opinion. Rambam says what Harry says. You will find that all that I have summarized for you concerning their divisions and the point I have made, calling attention to the fact that this is where they erred, are clearly set forth in Alexander of Aphrodite's treatise on governance. Okay? Alexander was one of the most famous and most well-accepted commentators on Aristotle in late antiquity. Late antiquity means like from the 4th to the 8th centuries. We call late antiquity, that's the period before the Middle Ages. Okay.
If I understand this correctly, these philosophers, example Alexander, contend that God doesn't know what is happening to us.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And then, but Maimonides claims that that's not true.
Correct. Correct.
All right, then, if I were Alexander, I would come back and say that, then why are so many bad things happening to people?
Correct,
yeah,
right.
But by that time, Alexander was dead.
Right, right, right.
1,000 years almost dead.
So, one very important point here is that we are learning that the issue of theodicy has bothered not only Jewish thinkers over the course of thousands of years, it has bothered thinkers who we wouldn't even consider to be religious.
They wouldn't even consider theodicy. People like Alexander wouldn't even consider theodicy because there's no need to justify God's action in their view.
I don't understand why you say that. The whole thing we just went through
was an effort
to try to justify God.
Right. No. He's rejecting theodicy because he says God doesn't know.
I would say it differently. He is justifying God in the only way possible by saying that God doesn't know. No. That justifies what's happening on earth. God doesn't know what's happening, so how can you blame him?
If he doesn't know, you do away with the whole idea of God's grace. No. Look, if he's summarizing Aristotle,
he's not summarizing Aristotle.
No. But Aristotle comes out with I know very little about Aristotle, with the idea of the great mover, who creates the world,
prime mover,
gets out of the way.
So let me just say a sentence here. Alexander was a major, perhaps absolutely one of the major commentators on Aristotle in late antiquity. However, when we call Alexander a commentator, which he was, we have to be careful what we mean by the word commentator. Commentators, as we know very well from Judaism, they don't just tell you the pshat of the verse. Yeah. Commentators can write a whole treatise on one word in the book they're commentating on, and that whole book they write may have very little connection to the meaning of that one word in context. Alexander was a commentator on Aristotle's writings, but don't confuse what Alexander wrote with Aristotle's intention. They're two separate things. Alexander was a major thinker in his own right, but in the world of antiquity, one of the major modes of writing independent treatises was by using the form of commentary. Okay?
But again, this was not a Jewish God. What God was this?
This is...
The Greeks had so many gods.
The
impersonal perfect being.
The philosopher's God that is a development from the writings of Aristotle.
It's prime mover.
But again, it's not exactly what Aristotle talked about. Aristotle would not go through what we have in the board.
I'm not arguing with you.
Yeah, okay.
No.
And some of the ideas of God through Maimonides come from Aristotle.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So at this point, we are up the creek. Right? Because we went through a philosophical analysis of dealing with theodicy, justifying God, and we got nowhere. Right? We got nowhere. Certainly, the Rambam doesn't want to remain where Alexander brought us to, that God doesn't know. That is, the Rambam says, an aberrant opinion. Therefore, we have to go back to the drawing board, but we don't know where to turn. All the possibilities are closed before us. Let's go forward in any case. See and marvel, says the Rambam, how they, meaning the ancient philosophers in late antiquity, how they plunged into something worse than that which they tried to avoid, from the frying pan into the fire, and how they were ignorant of a matter to which they were constantly drawing our attention, and that they were always explaining to us. As for their plunging into something worse than that which they tried to avoid, It consisted in the fact that in trying to avoid imputing negligence to God, that is to say, number three, they decided he's ignorant, and that everything that is in this lowly world is hidden from him, that he does not apprehend it. In other words, they tried to avoid three. In doing so, they got to doesn't know, which is worse than three, says the Rambam. From the frying pan into the fire. As for their being ignorant of that to which they were constantly drawing our attention, it consists in their considering what exists from the point of view of the circumstances of human individuals. That's important. They made a big mistake, says the Rambam, by considering that which exists from the point of view of human individuals. Because as we said earlier, about half an hour ago, you should only consider God's goodness from the point of view of the species, the universals, and not the particulars.
The long range view.
The long range. Because as we said, the Rambam says, individual humans are of no value compared to the whole that exists and endures. So this whole analysis here was based on the assumption that we see bad things happening in the world. But the Rambam's going to say, who sees bad things? Look at the species and not at the individual, you won't see bad things. And again, that's a hint to where he will be going later.
Look at the nation, look at the people, look at
the human race.
The human race is one category, but look at it, like the Jewish people is much broader than any individual within the Jewish people.
You're right, but the Rambam hasn't gone into that.
Yeah.
The Rambam basically is saying, have you ever seen a human species die? Never.
What do you mean a human species?
You don't mean individual.
I'm being facetious.
What about the big plague that they had, you know?
The human species lived. Not one human species ever died, right?
We're the only one, Harry.
Well...
It can die, though, biologically. It's possible.
But it never happened.
There were species in the past that have disappeared.
Right, like the Neanderthals.
Okay, look, we're in the framework of the Rambam knew. The Rambam never saw a human species die.
We
so
say.
From the point of view of the species, there is no death. And there's no disease. Have you ever seen a human species get sick?
No, the species as a whole. The species
right.
has been around for a long time.
And it's never gotten sick or died.
Maimonides believes it, thinks it's going to be here in perpetuity.
It's evolved.
It's even getting better.
Sort of.
What about the view that that mankind declines the farther he gets away from Sinai?
Oh, no.
Did Rambam subscribe to that?
It's a good question if he subscribes to it.
Yeah.
So let's not go there. Okay, so let's go on. Says the Rambam, explaining the mistake of the philosophers, the top of page 463,
right.
But the evils befalling the latter, that is to say species, and now he repeats things we learned earlier, derive from them, that is to say, from their own free will of hurting themselves or hurting others, or from the necessity of the nature of matter, right? That's the first type of the three reasons why bad things happen. As the philosophers always say and make clear, that they should have known that. We have already made clear what was necessary regarding this. Okay, we're going to stop reading this paragraph, and we're going to skip to the bottom of the paragraph. The bottom of the page, I mean to say.
To sum up.
To sum up, it has become clear to you that of all of them, if they had found that the circumstances of the human individuals are well ordered, according to what appears as order to the multitude, would not at all have plunged into all this speculation and would not have grown confused. Right? They were confused and plunged into speculation because they thought that bad things happen to good people. But if they had found circumstances to be well ordered, they wouldn't have gone into all this confusion. What first impelled them towards this speculation was the fact that they considered the circumstances of people, of the wicked and the good, and that in their opinion these matters were not well ordered. But again, why in their opinion were these matters not well ordered? Because they looked at individuals and didn't look at the species. As was said by those among us who are ignorant, the way of the Lord is not well ordered. Okay, now we begin the next chapter.
So what's that summary telling us? I'm not confused.
You said you're not confused.
I said I am confused. What's that summary? What did that summary tell us?
So we're, again, to summarize, and it's good to summarize, we went through this whole progression of thought that's on the board,
right,
and we came to a conclusion that's worse than any of the other possibilities, right, says the Rambam. And what plunged us into this confusion, says the Rambam, is that we the philosophers, we looked at individual circumstances and didn't look at the universals, didn't look at the species. Had we looked at the species, we would have realized that everything is as well ordered as it could be, and we would not have reached this terrible conclusion.
Well, basically, it doesn't say the way of the Lord is not well ordered.
Mm-hmm. That's what the ignorant say, that the way of the Lord is not well ordered.
Well, it depends under what type, under which government you were living at the time. I mean, Maimonides lived in what, 13th century?
He lived at the very, very, very beginning of the 13th century, yes. Yeah. Died in 1204.
And, and he also lived, you know, he lived in Egypt also, you know. What type of government is he referring to? I mean, because people live according in order, according to what government they're living under.
But those are all things that are a function of free will. That certainly doesn't concern me, says the Rambam. That's not something you should blame God for.
Free will is can be limited by government.
But that's the free will of the government.
Which is people.
It's what human beings do to themselves or do to other people. The evils that government do is the evils that other people do to people. That says the Rambam, don't blame God.
Free will is limited by what the other person's free will. If they're stronger than you are, they overcome your free will. Mm-hmm. You have no...
It's their free will.
You have no free will.
No, but I mean, but Rambam was saying that as long as you're living according to the order, a proper order, but the question is, what is a proper order?
So wait a second.
Depends on what government you're living under.
No, Harry, remember the three different types of evils. Mm-hmm. It's concerning only the third category. Evils we inflict upon ourselves personally, that the Rambam said, if you live according to the nature of existence, that everything will be fine. And only in that third category. You still have the issue of the second category, which is what other people do to you, and the issue of the first category, things that happen because of the nature of matter. So the second category, what others do to you, you might suffer, but don't blame God. Blame other people. And the first category, don't blame God, because the fact that you suffer is just a function of the fact that the species is the best it could be. And the fact that the species has generation and degeneration, that means you're going to die. But that's not an evil. But that's just you.
You know, the people have been brainwashed all their lives to believe that everything that's happened is controlled by God.
Well, the Rambam doesn't accept brainwashing. He goes through things step
by
step.
That's the point, and that's why they think that way. So he's trying to un-brainwash it.
That is a very good way to say what the Rambam is doing in the whole Guide to Perplexed.
Yeah. It's interesting. The first reason that this is the way of matter, Rambam is speaking not only as a philosopher, but as a very competent physician who's certainly seen all kinds of disease and disability in his life. And he doesn't negate that. That's how he, one of the ways in which he handles that.
I would say that to the Rambam, as a physician, he imputes even a larger quantity of human malady to individual mismanagement of their body than we do today.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Even more than we do today. Right? Many of the things that we attribute, well, of course, many things we attribute to mismanagement, whether it's heart disease or lung cancer, and many, many other things. Hypertension. The Rambam attributes many things that we today attribute to disease, to invasion of the body from the outside. He attributes them also to mismanagement. Okay, here we are, chapter 17.
Well, I didn't get much out of that.
Oh, yes, you did, Harry.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you did. The opinions of people about providence are five in all. He's going to define how we can think about God's providence into five different categories. And all of them are ancient. I mean that they are opinions that have been heard at the time of the prophets, since the true law has appeared that has illumined all this darkness. The first opinion is the profession of those that consider that there is no providence at all with regard to anything, whatever, in all that exists. That everything in it, the heavens and the things other than they, has happened by chance and in accordance with the way things were predisposed. That might be a reference to astrology, predisposed. Mm-hmm. And that there is no one who orders, governs, or is concerned with anything. This is the opinion of Epicurus. By the way, it's irrelevant to us if that's really what Epicurus held.
Right.
That's what the commentators on Epicurus told the Rambam through his reading that Epicurus held. The Rambam didn't read Greek. He read Greek philosophy in Arabic translation, and the translations very often were not translations, they were commentaries. Okay? But that doesn't matter for us. He also professes that there are atoms and holds that they mingle according to chance, and that what is generated out of them is generated by chance. Those in Israel who are unbelievers also profess this opinion. They are those of whom it is said they have belied the Lord and said it is not He. Aristotle has demonstrated this opinion is inadmissible, that it cannot be true that all things should have been generated by chance, and that on the contrary, there is someone who orders and governs them. In what proceeds, we have already mentioned something of this back in the second part of the Guide to Perplexed that we didn't talk about. Okay, so I just want to say one thing about this opinion, which is that I think, although I'm not sure, that the Rambam would say that anyone who believes that there is order in the way nature was originally set up, that thinker is really not in this category. This category is people who not only say that God doesn't intervene now, but that God never had anything to do with setting things up. That from the very beginning, it all made no sense. All chance. There's no providence in any sense, not even the sense of ordering nature at the outset. Okay, that's the first opinion. The second opinion is the opinion of those who hold that providence watches over certain things, that these exist through the governance and the ordering of one who governs and orders, whereas other things are left to chance. Certain things are providential, certain things aren't. This is the opinion of Aristotle. I will sum up, for your benefit, his opinion on providence. He holds that God, may be exalted, takes care of the spheres and of what is in them, and that for this reason their individuals remain permanently as they are. Right? The sun, the moon, the planets, the Rambam believed, as per Aristotle, that they are permanent and eternal, they never change, and God is making them exist forever. Alexander has formulated this, saying that in Aristotle's opinion, God's providence ends at the sphere of the moon. In the sublunar world, there's no providence. In the above lunar world, there's providence. That's Alexander's understanding of Aristotle, but the Rambam's going to go on to say that's not exactly so. It's not what Aristotle really held. This is a branch deriving from his root doctrine concerning the eternity of the world. For he believes that providence corresponds to the nature of what exists. Accordingly, with regard to the spheres whose individuals are permanent and what is in them, providence regarding them means that they remain permanent in a changeless state. Now, just look for a moment. That's called providence, even though it doesn't mean that God is continually intervening in the lives of the sun and the moon. The fact that God made them permanent and He wants them to be permanent, that's called providence. See how we're using the word differently? Okay?
So so he made them and he walked away from them.
And that's still called providence. That's still called providence. If it exists continually the way he wanted it, then that's providence.
But the changeless state means there's no progression. That's
right, the sun and the moon are changeless. Mm-hmm. The sun and the moon and all the planets are changeless. That's God's will. They exist by God's will. And even if you don't impute any direct divine intervention in what happens with them, it's still called providence.
So he imagined a static situation.
Static situation.
No new planets.
No new planets. In the
even though they were living, they're gods.
They're called living, but they're living not in the sense that things in the sublunar world live, because it's a different type of matter.
But it's interesting. What he starts off and saying, these opinions are those of the prophets, which basically means the Jewish prophets.
No, not of the prophets, from the time of the prophets.
At the time of the prophets?
Yeah.
Yeah, but not of the prophets.
So he's saying there's a universal God that was here before the Jewish God, effectively, if he says it was here at the time of the prophets.
It was the God of the Greek philosophers.
He's saying that at the time of the prophets, there were these philosophers who had these opinions.
Of God.
Of God. Again, okay. We don't have to believe that this is historically true. But this is what the Rambam believes.
A very different God from the prophets, or the God of the prophets. So.
The prophets, the God of the prophets, was a Jewish God.
The prophets disappear after the destruction of the temple. No more prophets.
The first temple.
Greek philosophy starts sometime in the 3rd or 4th century. Right.
Fine, but that's all irrelevant for us here.
So it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter. But just as the existence of other things was under the moon, whose individuals have not, but whose species have enduring existence, like human beings, species exist forever but the individuals don't, derives necessarily from theirs. In other words, our existence, according to the Rambam, according to Alexander, according to Aristotle, our existence derives from the existence of the planets. That the life force of God that keeps us alive goes through the planets. The planets are like broadcasting stations. Mm-hmm. And if those planets weren't there, the divine energy wouldn't reach us.
A series of emanations from God, mm-hmm, to planets and then from,
mm-hmm,
planets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's science fiction.
There is likewise an overflow from the providence in question, overflow from the providence to the planets down to us, which overflow necessitates the durability and the permanence of the species, though the durability of the latter's individuals be impossible. In other words, the planets are eternal through God's providence, meaning that's the way he created them, and that permanence seeps down below the planets to the sublunar world, but it seeps down not to the individuals but to the species. Right? The human species is permanent like the moon is permanent. But individual human beings are not permanent as opposed to the moon, which is permanent. However, the individuals of every species are also not neglected in every respect. It's not that there's no providence over the individuals according to Aristotle. For in all portions of this matter that have been purified to the point of receiving the form of growth, there are placed faculties that preserve them for a certain time through attracting them towards that which agrees with them and through repelling that which is not useful for them. Now, it's the fact that an ant or a flower or a human being knows how to keep itself alive, that's called providence. The fact that we do what we have to do to find the right food and to avoid dangerous situations, and the fact that the plant knows how to bend itself towards the light and knows how to conserve water when there's less water, and the fact that ants know how to create a colony of ants and keep themselves alive, all that is called providence. Okay? All that's called providence. So again, look how the word is changing its meaning.
Are they using the word providence for nature?
Yeah.
Don't use the word nature, that's going to confuse us. That's, since it works in an orderly fashion, according to the way God set it up, that's providence.
Okay. The fact that it works in an orderly fashion makes it providence. Right.
That's the definition of the word.
So you're also talking about the changing definition of providence through the ages?
I wouldn't say here through the ages. I'd say the Rambam wants to get us accustomed to a new understanding of what the word means.
He's talking about their take on providence.
Yeah.
Okay.
But of course,
what they're calling providence.
Yes. Okay. But to me, it's important. I think the Rambam is doing this for, among other reasons, to get us used to the idea of understanding the concept in a new fashion.
Okay.
It's going to play a role not just for Aristotle, but for the Rambam himself, for his own philosophy. Right. We have to be ready. He has to prime us for what he's about to say in another week or two.
Right. So if you have the original five opinions at the time of the prophets.
We're in the second one now. Opinion.
But there were five of them were there at the time of the prophets, which was, and then Aristotle found them also.
No, Aristotle is one of the five. He's the second of the five.
No, these are not the prophets' opinions. These are the opinions of the philosophers.
From the time of the prophets.
Opinions that are heard at the time of the prophets.
Yeah.
Well before Aristotle.
This is during a period of history known as the Axial Age, contemporaneous to the prophets.
Yes, so I don't know the answer to your question. Does the Rambam think that Aristotle lived the time of the prophets, or do you simply think that Aristotle is codifying the opinion that came long before him? Okay, that I don't know the answer to that.
Sure, the Rambam. Because Aristotle was, what year was he?
300, 200.
Yeah, 300 or so.
He was a tutor to Alexander the Great. So
right.
Around.
Now it's 332 to 335.
Right.
Yes. Okay. So,
335.
We're reading on. Again, in those portions of the matter in question have been purified to a greater extent, so that they receive the form of sensation. There are placed other faculties which preserve and safeguard them, as well as another capacity, namely that of moving, so as to direct themselves toward that which agrees with them and to flee that which disagrees. All these things that we know to flee, we're able to flee and know to flee from danger, that's called providence, because that helps us to keep the species alive. Furthermore, every individual has been given that which the species he belongs to needs, right? Finally, such portions of the matter in question have been purified to the point of receiving the form of the intellect, human beings, that have been given other faculty through which every one of them, according to the perfection of the individual in question, governs, thinks, and reflects on what may render possible the durability of himself as an individual and the preservation of the species. It's all called providence. The fact that I use my mind, is called, and I use it well, is called providence, because God gave me the mind and he gave me the ability to use it well, to preserve myself temporarily, to preserve the species forever. It's all called providence. Where did I leave off? As for the other motions that occur in all individuals of a species, they occur by chance and do not, according to Aristotle, come about through the governance or ordering of one who governs or orders. For instance, if a hurricane or a wind of less than hurricane force should blow, it would indubitably bring some leaves of this particular tree to fall, break a branch of another tree, topple a stone from a certain fence, raise up the dust so that it covers a certain plant and causes its destruction, agitate great waves in the water, so the ship is there, would found and said all the people on board, or at least some of them would be drowned. That's not providence, according to Aristotle. Some people drown, and some people live. That's not providence. But it is providence when one person has the wherewithal through the use of his intellect to flee from the ship and live. That's called providence, because there he's using the tools that God gave him to affect the continuation of the species. That's called providence. Consequently, according to him, Aristotle, there is no difference between the fall of the leaf and the fall of the stone, on the one hand, or the drowning of the excellent and superior men that were on board the ship on the other. Similarly, he does not differentiate between an ox that defecates upon a host of ants so they die, or a building whose foundations are shaken upon all the people at their prayers who are found in it so they die. That's just chance, says Aristotle. And there is no difference, according to him, between a cat coming across a mouse and devouring it, or a spider devouring a fly on the one hand, or a ravenous lion meeting a prophet and devouring him on the other. It's all chance. But if the prophet escaped, using his mind, that would be called providence. That would be called providence.
Especially if the prophet prayed and he perceived that God rescued him, would be called providence.
Providence is the use of the mind in a natural fashion.
I'm sorry,
right?
I'm interjecting for that.
Right. So how about, we're in Aristotle here.
How about the mouse decided to go elsewhere? We saw the cat coming. Is that the mind too?
It's providence.
According to what he said in the previous faith, that's also called providence, right? Because that's using
sense
the tools built into the species to...
It flees.
What?
The adrenaline kicks in and it flees the cat.
To sum up, the basis of his opinion is as follows. Everything that, according to what he saw, subsisted continuously without any corruption or change of proceeding at all, as, for instance, the states of the spheres... or that observed a certain orderly course, only deviating from it in anomalous cases, as for existence of natural things, was said by him to subsist through governance. I mean to say that divine providence accompanied it. That's providence.
Mm-hmm. So when we discovered the atom bomb and used it, that was providence.
If we used it to save human life?
Yes, we did.
No, if we used it to kill people.
No, that's not providence. But if the killing people save people, then that's providence. That's called providence.
So what's the difference between things that happen because of nature and things that happen between because of divine providence?
What's the
everything that is part and parcel of helping to affect the continuation
of the species,
that's called providence.
Everything that befells people is nature.
And everything that doesn't serve to affect the continuation of the species,
so God is
that's
in the
not
positive,
providence.
God is in the positive only. God is only in the
no.
Positive.
Again, don't say positive. It now sounds funny. It sounds...
the survival of...
existence. Remember, existence is good. Everything that brings forward, moves forward the continued existence of the species, that's part of the divine plan, according to Aristotle. On the other hand, all that, according to what he saw, does not subsist continuously or adhere to a certain order, as for instance the circumstances of the individuals, every plant, animal, or man, are said by him to exist by chance and not through the governance of one who governs. He means thereby that they are not accompanied by divine providence, and he holds that it's impossible that providence should accompany the circumstances. This is consequent upon his opinion concerning the eternity of the world and the impossibility of that which exists being in any respect different from what it is. Things have to be as they are. Those who, just one more sentence, those who, deviating from our law, believed in this opinion were those who said, the Lord has forsaken the earth.
So what did the Rambam attribute, he's using these examples of hurricanes and devastation, what did he attribute that to?
Chance, according to Aristotle.
Mm-hmm. It's all a crapshoot, Harry.
Huh?
It's a crapshoot. Some come out ahead, some don't.
Yeah.
And again, this is only Aristotle. It's not yet what the Rambam believes. And by the way, when we get to fifth opinion, which the Rambam says the opinion of Judaism, he says there are three possibilities within it. So there are going to be eight altogether.
Well, we have a fourth opinion down at the bottom of the next page.
Should we go on some more or should we stop?
Is it time to stop?
Yeah, okay, Carolyn says time to stop.
I have a class.
We'll stop.